Grief in a Time of Crisis. Have you felt a gnawing sense of uncertainty and sadness since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic? Has a loved one died? Have you lost your job, or are you worried you might? Are you having trouble with the isolation and change during the COVID crisis? There are so many reasons we are feeling grief right now. And for many, the impact is now even worse in the face of protests and despair over racial injustice in America. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll explore ways to cope with the overwhelming feelings of loss and grief so many of us are experiencing. And we'll learn ways to support others who are grieving. What are you doing to try and keep yourself centered? What can our experts help you understand? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Our nation is facing a time of grief right now. The coronavirus pandemic has meant loss for so many, and now there is more grief over the deaths of Black Americans and racial injustice in our country. Today, we're going to talk about how grief affects us and how to cope with it. Joining us, Dr. Linda Durst, who is Chief Medical Officer at Maine Behavioral Health Care and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center, and Amy Dulac, a Bereavement Coordinator for Androscoggin Home Health Care and Hospice. As always, we want to hear from you. Share your stories and questions. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both so much for joining us. Dr. Durst, the original reason for this program was the coronavirus pandemic and the many levels of grief that come with that. And we've all been experiencing now for a couple months, some people more acutely than others, some in different ways. But now on top of this, we have this layer of what seems like a real, just a very, very, very difficult in our collective history with the protests going on, the death of George Floyd. And I'm wondering if you can talk about how this is affecting us. When we talk about feeling grief, what are we feeling? What is grief?
Excellent question, Jennifer. Grief encompasses many things, actually. And I think grief is a very individual experience. It depends on your culture. It depends on your personal experiences. There are certain, within a culture, there are certain generalities, like a sense of loss, disorientation, depression, anger. All of those are probably common experiences, but depending on what you came in with, what baggage you carried prior to the experience of loss, will determine what your individualized experience of grief can be. And it could be more serious for some people than others. It could be more extreme. And I think there are many factors that dictate how you personally will experience grief.
Mm. And I'm thinking about, there are some people who have a very concrete reason to feel grief right now. Maybe someone they love has died of COVID-19, or maybe they've lost their job. But then there's so many others. It's just sort of the loss of life as we know it, in this sense of not knowing what's next.
I think that's what's made this time particularly difficult. It's really, at the heart of it, it's a loss of control. And one thing that's very important for us is a sense of control that gives us a certain stability. And so so now we, not only is life not as we knew it, a lot of us can't go into our offices. A lot of us can't go to stores and shop and have the usual releases that we have, but we don't even know when this is going to end. And it's that lack of knowledge, that up in the airness, is what's so difficult for people to appreciate now, and contributes to this global sense of loss in truth. Yeah.
Amy, I want to bring you into this conversation, because what you do every day, long before the COVID crisis hit, is deal with grief. And I'm wondering if you can talk about what kind of grief you deal with, and the differences and similarities between the very human and usual grief from dealing with the loss of a loved one to what we're going through right now.
Sure. The grief I deal with is two-part. I often deal with people who are pre-bereaved. So because their loved one is on hospice services, they are aware that it's a terminal diagnosis and that their loved one is going to die. And that unknown piece, I think, is what plays into a lot of what we're all feeling right now. Even if we're not losing a loved one or haven't lost a loved one, I think that not knowing, that unknown, is really difficult. And I also work with people after one of our patients has died, or anybody in the community has passed and they're in need of grief support. A lot of people have never done this before. You know, they don't know what's normal, what's common. And although grief is very individual, it's also somewhat predictable. And people just don't know that. And a lot of them have never done it before. I truly worry about a lot of folks that don't realize they're grieving right now.
Mm.
They have nothing to compare it to, but they, and if they don't validate it, if you don't understand that that's what's going on, it can make it all the more difficult to deal with. Whether, like you were saying, is it the loss of a job, loss of contact with your family, loss of a business, loss of a sense of security. It just goes through my head all the time lately, thinking about all the losses we've had. And most of all, like the doctor was saying, just that unknown, that loss of hope, I think, is something that we have to really cling to and say, you know, that's the one thing I can't give up right now. It's just we don't know what to hope for.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned, Amy, acknowledging it, and that's what I was going to ask you. Dr. Durst, is one of the first steps of dealing with this to even acknowledge that you're feeling it and to name it?
Absolutely. I think when you look at the ability to be able to navigate through grief, one of the very important things is to feel it, to actually feel what you're going through. Because if you don't acknowledge it, it doesn't go away. It actually stays with you, and it will revisit you at later points. And so when you are dealing with grief, it is critical that you name it, you recognize it, and you face it. Now, you may have to pace yourself with that, and I think that's important. You don't just want to immerse yourself necessarily, but you do have to face it to be able to get over it.
What kind of lessons, Amy, can hospice give the rest of us?
Oh.
About facing grief.
Well, millions of people have done it before you, and they've made it to the other end. Life will never be exactly the same, and you will never be exactly the same, but you can look for the lessons. And I really, when I first meet up with people, especially in my groups, they're often very, I hesitate to use the word broken, but they're frail, and they can barely speak through their sobbing. And then 3 or 4 or 5 weeks later, they've gotten to a point where they're realizing that they had so many more good times to remember than the difficult times that they're experiencing right now. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and everybody has been through this. It's a normal part of life. It's difficult, but it can be done, and other people have done it before you, and there are ways to do it, and there are people out there that can help you with it.
Dr. Durst, does the kind of grief we're experiencing right now collectively, is it going to affect people different in different age groups?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So children definitely grieve differently than adults. Adults do. Children are very resilient, and so they actually manage a lot of times better than adults can. And adults, you know, depending again on what their previous experience of grief has been, can color how they're experiencing grief now. Certainly, if you've had prior experiences of grief, it's sometimes the more experience of you've had, the more difficult it can be, because each loss takes from you a piece of you. It really does. And so depending on how you've navigated previous losses, you may be more at risk. And older people grieve differently as well, because they've had more collective losses. And so they may be more vulnerable, and they have less supports, less people in their cohort who can support them, who understand their particular experience as an older person. So it can be very different depending on what age group you're in.
I understand that a big part of this right now is isolation. So many people are staying in one place and not going out either at all or only for the bare necessities. And I'm thinking, Amy, as I talk with you, I know that so many older Americans are in that situation often, that maybe a spouse or a partner has died years ago and they're used to living in a house all by themselves. Tell me about grief, isolation, and tricks, or I don't know if tricks is the right word, but ways to center oneself, to help oneself if you're living by yourself during a time of grief.
Sure. A lot of different things you can do to work through it. I think journaling is a great way to work through grief. Putting something to paper and then looking at it again even later on can be helpful. Even writing down your emotions to make it a little more concrete and understandable. Listening to music, scrapbooking. I mean, it might be hard to get supplies, but, you know, pulling out those pictures, watching your loved one's favorite movie, definitely reaching out to people, calling people, and making yourself call out to people, because a lot of times when we get isolated, we have a tendency to just continue that behavior. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. And Dr. Durst, I wanted to ask you for some advice. If there's someone you know, you used the word frail before, vulnerable. If you know someone who's having a hard time coping with all of this, what do you not say to someone? And what do you say? What is actually helpful?
I think a lot of times just listening to somebody. I think sometimes we're always looking to come up with an answer or a solution for somebody. And for the grieving person, that can actually be more harmful, and it can trigger feelings of guilt. A lot of times, reaffirming what someone has to say about their loss, listening to their stories, joining in the laughter about an experience with somebody, and just reaffirming what they have to say. I think, unfortunately, sometimes we might inadvertently trigger guilt in somebody by offhanded comments, and so it's important to be very careful about what we say, and we don't want to compound the grief when someone is acutely grieving. We want to make sure that we protect them from any ongoing upset feelings. And so that's a very vulnerable time, and I think it's important to listen more than talk, actually, to the person who's and if they're expressing themselves guilt, try to point out to them the good things that they did with that person and for that person.
Amy, what would you like to add to that?
I think it's really easy to say the wrong thing, and people get very we're in a very death-denying society, and people get very uncomfortable around people who are grieving, and they often ask me, you know, I don't know what to say. I said, you can tell them you don't know what to say. I think a listening presence is the most important and key thing you can do for a person who's grieving. And the other thing you don't want to do is conversational narcissism. You don't want to hijack the conversation and say, oh, I know how you feel because, you know, this happened to me. That's not using your time wisely with this person. They want to tell their story, and being there and listening to them tell their story is the kindest, most effective thing you can do for a person who's grieving.
Amy, I understand that you came to this work because of something really sad that happened in your own life. Are you comfortable sharing your story?
Sure. In 2001, my husband was diagnosed with esophageal cancer, and we thought we were going to beat it for a few months there, and then it became apparent that we were not. And about 6 weeks before he passed, the hospital suggested that we call hospice. And so we did, and Andrew Scoggin, the agency I work for, came in, and we had this wonderful nurse who I love to death. Anyway, she just made the whole experience so much easier, if I can use that word, around the loss of your husband. But it just, they took care of our family, and they were just emotionally there for us, physically, medically, cognitively. They were just there for us, and it just made it an easier transition. And afterwards, my children attended the program for grieving children and teens, which was through Andrew Scoggin. And then I went on to actually volunteer for them and intern with them for many years with that program. And about 6 years ago, I was looking through the Help Wanted, and I was in mental health before that. And I saw the ad for bereavement coordinator, and I pretty much just walked in there and said, this is my job. You have to give it to me. And I ended up working for the woman who had been my husband's nurse.
Oh, my gosh.
So, wow. The agency is just so very special to me, and what we do is so very special to me. And I understand the importance of being there for people when they're grieving, because it's just such an unknown place to be. And it's a very isolating, lonely place to be. And so to be there for people is just, it's just really important to me.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Dr. Durst, Before we go to a break, I want to ask you, at what point do you advise people to seek professional help? At what point do you know that maybe what you're going through right now is more than you can handle without some professional help?
I think that, first of all, it's important to get a sense from the person themselves if they feel that they need help. Sometimes people recognize, I'm just not functioning the way I normally function, and I'm lost. I don't know what to do. So I think if somebody is seeking help, absolutely. And it doesn't necessarily have to be seeing a therapist. There are grief support groups and grief therapists that really help people to navigate through grief. Like Amy, what brings people to this work oftentimes is someone's own grief experience. So I think that, you know, making sure that somebody has some interest in getting help. Now, if you recognize that somebody's struggling, and the way you would know that is, you know, grief can be pretty extreme, and it can appear pathologic, but I think what you have to realize is it's usually self-contained. People can, you know, not sleep well right away, or they might feel very disoriented or confused, very depressed. But usually it's the experience that occurred, not anything more general than that. And as long as they're still able to function somewhat, then allow them to have that process. But if the symptoms are prolonged and very severe, and they become a little more generalized, I think that's when you would want to, that is when you would want to suggest that the person get help. I've seen very extreme grief reactions very early on. Certainly they're more rare, but I've seen people at the graveside who became very symptomatic and had to be hospitalized immediately. That doesn't happen very often. I think that what we have to recognize is that grief is a process and that it should not be pathologized. I think we have to allow people to have the room to grieve, and it's only when they're not able to function for a prolonged period that we should consider that this is something that needs other intervention. And I do suggest to people, if they're not doing well, to consider attending a support group or to see a grief therapist, which is a different kind of work that you do than someone who might have been precipitated into a major depressive order, disorder. Grief work can be very sustaining and very uplifting for people and very helpful for their ongoing progress.
We're talking about grief. How many of us, probably most of us, are grieving during these difficult times. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Livingston Hughes Surveyors. Celebrating 26 years and grateful for Maine's health workers and first responders. Thank you. LivingstonHughes.com, and Northeastern University's Rue Institute in Portland, whose Resilience Scholarship Program supports recent graduates across New England, roux.northeastern.edu.
People are starting to be concerned that even if somebody succeeds in producing a vaccine, that not everybody will get equitable access to that vaccine.
I'm Marco Werman from The World. Our reporters and producers keep track of news from countries around the globe to bring you the latest on how other governments are managing the pandemic and what their experiences can tell us. Keeping you up to date on The World.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 3 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Is your business or organization eagerly waiting or already on the path to move towards some level of reopening as we slowly start to transition safely to less stringent social distancing measures? Maine Public can help with strategic messaging so that you can get the word out quickly and to the right audience that you are back. We've created a series of underwriting opportunities called Springboard Packages that run over 6 weeks and are specially designed to connect you with Maine's largest radio audience. We can help you in a very effective and budget-conscious way. For information, please call Maine Public or contact Susan Tran at strann@mainpublic.org and see what we can do to help you. Again, that's strann@mainpublic.org, and thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking about the feelings of grief that so many people are feeling these days. Joining me, Amy Dulac, who is bereavement coordinator for Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, and Dr. Linda Durst, chief medical officer at Maine Behavioral Healthcare and chair of psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. We invite you to be part of the conversation. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Catherine Murray. She is an author, poet, and speaker, and wrote a memoir, Now You See the Sky, about the loss of her son. Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you.
Your own life experience as a parent led you to try to understand grief. Tell us what happened and about your journey.
Well, when my middle son was diagnosed with leukemia at age 5, we were living in rural Thailand, so there was some back and forth between there and here. But in the end, he did die when he was 6 and a half, and I had to learn pretty quickly how to manage that grief. And what led me from there to the memoir was learning that writing was a really an important way for me to work through my grief and just some things that Amy and Linda mentioned about isolation. And, I think the act of writing helped me through the isolation in the sense that when one writes and names, just as the guests were talking about, names the emotion that we're going through, that actually ultimately, if I think I was able to do it, over time in a way that at first was a way of coping and then really ended up being a way of transforming the sorrow and the loss into something with meaning.
What do you do now to help others who are dealing with feelings of grief?
Well, I work with people as a writing guide and a grief guide, and I have I teach using writing as a way of healing, and I lead a group of people grieving, and again using writing and the support community support group support as a way of moving through grief.
What's your advice to people who are feeling overwhelmed right now with the difficulties of the pandemic and now all that pain about racial injustice being expressed in protests?
Yes, right now it's just overwhelm is the word that keeps coming to me because of, seeing so much grief, hundreds of years of grief, of unacknowledged grief, on the part of the dominant culture and the racism and the oppression. And it's now just all coming out in this very, very clear way. I think it's making us, so many of us, feel really overwhelmed. And my experience with writing and with grief was that was exactly the time that I needed to sit down and ask myself what needs to come out, it's too overwhelmed to do anything else right. And the writing is always about just expression, self-expression and release, not about trying to produce anything readable. I would encourage people to just get out a pen and paper and let the confusion and the overwhelm come out. And I find by doing that, you sort of create an audience of one in yourself. And in a way, you're eventually able to cultivate kind of a wise, kind observer and some extra compassion within oneself that ends up being a very useful thing.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for giving us a call. That's Catherine Murray. She's an author who leads workshops on grief and healing. Her memoir is called Now You See the Sky. Linda Durst, Amy also mentioned, as did Catherine, writing and the power of writing. Why is that?
I think that writing is an expression of your innermost feelings. And I think that is a catharsis for people who are grieving. It's it's a way for us to be able to feel, which I think is very important, to face what we're going through. And it's a very personal experience, and there are no boundaries to it. So I think it is a great medium to be able to express somebody's grief. It also allows you to connect with your loss. A lot of people feel that writing a letter to the person that they have lost, expressing things that they couldn't necessarily express when the person was alive, is helpful to them, or examining their own relationship with that person. So the writing can take many forms. It could be abstract. It could have a distinct purpose. And so I think it is a great method by which people can get through loss, and it can be an ongoing exercise, which can be helpful to them.
I'll go to John, who's calling from Gorham. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Yes. I don't know if I'm suffering from grief or what, but remember back when the coronavirus was first around and the state CDC was saying we now have 8 cases or we have 10 cases? Well, I was one of the 8 or the 10, and so was my wife. So we both have had the coronavirus. And the feelings we have about it, and I don't know if you can call it grief or you could just call it something else, but it's a lot of the things that you mentioned. And the way I mainly feel about it is that if somebody starts mentioning, oh, you had coronavirus, what was it like? And I just have the feeling of, it's none of your business. And I don't even know how to explain it. It's like, please don't ask me. And when I during the period that that we had the coronavirus, if it wasn't for the state CDC, we'd never have it. We wouldn't have ever had anybody even call us on the phone. So we had to suffer through this thing all by ourselves, with no guidance and no. What do we do? I mean, if you have a symptom, what do you do about it?
John, I really appreciate your call. I also know someone who had a positive test and feels the same way you do. So not alone. Dr. Durst.
So to me, it sounds that you had somewhat of a loss of privacy in a way that now everybody knew what you were dealing with, but also this loss of support. I think that this virus has created a lot of fear and anxiety in everybody around it. And so people who have experienced the virus are somewhat pariahs. They're to keep away from. We're afraid that we might get it. And so I think not only was the fear that you yourself had it and what that would do to you, but that other people were afraid to be near you. And now when it's brought up to you, you get to somewhat revisit that. And so I think that's what's made this especially difficult, because in the past, if you had some illness, you could rely on people to rally around you and support you and help you. And now it's as if you're on your own, and you don't know what's going on or what's going to happen, and you can't necessarily have other people to rely on. And I think that's what's so difficult. And even though you've survived, people may still be afraid, because there's so much unknown about it. That's the real difficulty that we're facing, is this ongoing lack of knowledge.
Mm. And John, I want to ask you a question, if you don't mind. What advice would you give to others if they know somebody who's had a positive diagnosis? Would you recommend they not say anything, or would you recommend that they give someone a call and say, is there something I can do for you?
They always did treat them before, and to act like, instead of being somebody to stay away from, instead of being someone to avoid, you relate to them in accordance with the CDC says. You use the guidance that the CDC says, and you relate to the person. You just don't let them alone and on their own. And that was the worst part of the whole thing, that we were on our own and we just couldn't. Everybody was, oh, do you want something to eat or something? And no, we just want to have a conversation with somebody about something other than this disease. And that's what I'd recommend.
Well, I thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. It's going to, I think, be a big eye-opener for a lot of people. I really appreciate it. We'll move on to Bob, who's calling from New Sharon. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I wanted to make the point that the grief of the loss of a lifelong love comes and goes in waves. My dear wife died 3 years ago tomorrow. And so needless to say, one of those ways is right upon me right now. I'm in a new relationship. She lost her husband 26 days after I lost my wife, and she's had exactly the same experience. Sometimes we're still, 3 years later, we're overwhelmed. Other times it's almost as if our dear spouse was still here.
Amy?
Oh, absolutely. We just acknowledged what would have been my husband's 66th birthday and the 18-year anniversary of his death. And even all those years later, and even with all the work I do with grief, it can hit you. And sometimes it hits you out of nowhere. And some days you're just fine. But it's the good thing about waves is they go back down. You know, they can be unexpected at times, but they do go back down. And if you understand them, it's, you know, there's an end to it. You go, okay, here it comes. And you can kind of just knowing that it's going to subside is a comfort. But it definitely, it stays with you. Like I said earlier, it changes who you are as a person.
Bob, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. We are talking about grief on Maine Calling. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a story to share or a tip, how did you get through something? Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bangor Savings Bank, celebrating all the ways people all over Maine are making life a little better. Bangor.com/spreadkindness. And Evergreen Home Performance, a locally owned energy efficiency company grateful for and proud to support Maine Public Radio. More at evergreenyourhome.com. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
James Augustine Healy is consecrated on June 2, 1875, as Bishop of Portland, becoming the first African-American Catholic bishop in the United States. Healy, born in 1830, was the eldest of 11 children. He was bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Maine from 1875 to 1900. During his time in Maine, which was a period of extensive immigration from Catholic countries, Healy oversaw the establishment of 60 new churches, 68 missions, 18 convents, and 18 schools. Healy died in 1900 in Portland.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine! The daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus usually takes place at about 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, each day's address is archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is scheduled for 2 o'clock weekday afternoons and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling, and we're talking about grief, what it's like to grieve, and how to help deal with it. My guests, Dr. Linda Durst with Maine Behavioral Healthcare and Amy Dulac with Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to go to an email from Al. He writes, "I am retired, have little family, but remain active. While I am profoundly saddened about the death and difficulties caused by the pandemic, my life has changed little and probably improved because of it. I exercise more. I have been eating and cooking better, and I've been connecting online more than I would otherwise. Life has been quieter, a bit more focused. Am I unique in this perception?" Dr. Durst.
I would say that he might be unique, although I have to say I've heard from others who've expressed that same sentiment, maybe not to that degree, so that people have said, you know, I talk to people more than I did previously, or I'm in contact with certain of my friends that I wasn't in before. I actually see people more via Zoom than I did see them in person. So I think that all of us, as we are getting through this pandemic, are learning to appreciate some of the positives that come out of it. Some people actually, like our emailer, have experienced more generalized improvement. So I think that, yes, I think some people are experiencing like a throwback in time, really, where things were a little bit simpler, except with the use of technology. I can't imagine it would be much more difficult if there were not technology during this time.
Right. And so I think I've heard people say that there's a sense of perspective now.
Yes. I think that there's a sense of appreciation and looking a little bit more at simpler things that were not appreciated as much in recent times, let's say.
We'll go to Jeff calling from Camden. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hi, I wasn't expecting that. hey, thanks for your discussion. I was just thinking, I lost my wife in October to cancer. She was 44 on a hard road. I want to just make a comment to men specifically. Please, 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 please don't let culture dictate your emotions. If you're going through something like this, feel free to cry as much as you want, and please be willing to talk it out. You have to let those feelings and thoughts out with those who are willing to listen. So just wanted to share that.
Jeff, I'm so sorry. And Amy, I suspect you're saying exactly.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry also, Jeff. And we really have seen an uptick in our the percentage of men who actually take our grief groups, which I thought was wonderful, because there is an underlying belief that men just don't cry and don't show their emotions. But I'm seeing a change in that, and I was very happy to see that. And it's, you know, there's no way to go around grief. You have to go through it, and experiencing those emotions is part of that. So thank you, Jeff, for encouraging people to do that. It's extremely important.
Yeah, thank you. We'll move on to Sue. Sue's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Sue. Go ahead.
Hi. I appreciate the program, but I'm 80 years old. I live by myself in an apartment in a community, but our community activities are not able to be active. So we have no dinner together. We don't have exercise classes. And those are the things that have helped me to maintain myself alone. My sense is that I am also in touch with the things that the virus has created in the sense of loss. I don't have my physical activities. I don't have the conversational time that I've had. I can't go to my sons and hug my son and my granddaughters. There's a grief about the things that I've lost. I had a volunteer opportunity, and I've lost that because the schools are closed. So I'm having a generalized grief, and I think people are having that, and they don't know that it's grief. So,
Sue, I think you're exactly right. Linda Durst.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that, what I would recommend is, again, one of the things that we've talked about, and I don't know if there's something that would be helpful to you, but in writing, and, you know, one of the things I've seen people do, which is absolutely a throwback, is actually write letters now that they hadn't before. That's a lost art. And because people actually have, you know, do a lot of emailing, but actually writing a letter to be in touch with people, but also to reach out via, if you're able to, via FaceTime or Zoom, if you have access to that technology. But you're right, it is a loss, and I think to be able to call it that and to recognize it and to perhaps spend time figuring out how you think it would be, what activities could you do that would help you to overcome it. Is there certainly not totally, because things aren't the same right now, but are there other activities that you might be able to do within your apartment? And so I think what this has done for folks is actually called to somewhat of their creative spirit in trying to figure out ways to get beyond it. But to acknowledge it is important. I think it's good that you know this is what you're experiencing. And to be good to yourself in ways, take advantage of some time to pamper yourself in a way that you might not if you were busier.
Sue, thank you so much for calling and sharing your insights. We're going to move to Emily calling from Portland. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for having this conversation. I'm a grief coach, and I just wanted to call in and chat a little bit about what grief actually looks like. I think one of the things that happens is people don't know they're grieving because they think of grief as a singular emotion. But what ends up happening is it's a combination of things like anger and sadness, fear, guilt, overwhelm. And then it sort of compounds into this big ball of the, you know, sort of unknown emotional experience. So it might be helpful for people to kind of break down their feelings and understand that grief includes all of that.
Thank you, Emily, for calling in and sharing that. Amy or Linda, do you have anything to add to that? or just well said.
I agree. I think it's multifaceted, and that's what maybe makes it so difficult to identify because it is many different things. And like our caller mentioned, it does come in waves and it does get better and worse. And so it's a dynamic process, really.
Thank you.
People need to realize that no emotion is right or wrong. Sometimes people feel like I shouldn't be feeling this. A lot of people experience guilt along with grief after the death of a loved one. And then when they express the sense of relief, if somebody, especially when somebody was on hospice, if they had been suffering, they voice their relief that the person was no longer suffering, and then they feel guilt for having felt relieved, mm-hmm. and they don't understand that this is so normal. But just to recognize that no emotion is right or wrong, especially when it comes to grief.
Thank you, Emily. An email from Dee. Can your guest recommend a group or a way to meet other widow or widowers in Maine? Emily, do you know of one?
I don't know of one. I imagine it would be easy enough to Google, and I'd be happy to look into that. If he would like to email me, he can email me at amy.dulac@andrewscoggin.org, but I don't know what of one specifically.
And an email from Bonnie, how to get over grief for animals. I was a livestock breeder and had to sell my herd. I miss them so and cry when I think of them. Dr. Durst.
Pets are part of your family, and so we grieve them like we would grieve another family member, and I think that we have to address that grief the same way we would address the grief of another loved one. All the ways that we would approach that grief, journaling and getting involved in memorialization, pictures, talking about. I think that sometimes there's a tendency for people to minimize the loss of pet family members, but they're very important, and they've been with us usually for a long time. And right. So I think that we can't minimize that. And that's where some of those comments might be hurtful if someone minimized that loss that somebody experienced.
Right. We'll go to Margaret. Go ahead, Amy. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I've had calls about this and did some research. And there's actually some very good TED Talks on pet loss.
Oh,
that they might find helpful.
Good tip. Great. Now, Margaret and Cape Elizabeth, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the show. My brother took his life 4 years ago, and that's, of course, hard. But 4 years later, I have a different need for my process. I've been taking care of my parents in their grief during this time, and we lost my stepfather since then, and I've run services for the communities and all kinds of things, and I feel like this fourth anniversary needs to be about me taking care of my own grief, but my mother moved in with us for COVID.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Dr. Durst, how do you carve out some time to take care of yourself when there is no time?
Well, I think you do carve out that time, is there a way that that you could perhaps get up earlier, go to bed later, make sure that you have some place and time to be able to breathe and take care of yourself? I think that surviving suicide losses has its own particular challenges, and I can recommend a nice book. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's called After Suicide Loss. It's by Jack Jordan. It's a great resource, and there might be exercises in there that you could do that would be helpful. And another resource is a book called Lessons of Loss by Robert Niemeyer. Both are like workbooks, and if you had time, a little time to yourself, if you could use that time to be able to do some of the exercises, which are very, very fulfilling, I have to say.
Yeah, good luck to you, Margaret. We'll go to Jilly in Soamesville. Hi, Jilly. We're getting close to the end of the program, so if you could be fairly quick, that'd be great.
Beauty. Yeah, I'll try to keep it short and sweet. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate and value this program, and especially the conversation today. I have been reflecting on the ways in which I have been able to take inventory with this sort of pause in time that COVID has offered me. You know, I still work full time. I have several side hustle jobs being on MDI, but what I make sure never to do is to miss a meeting in the sense of connecting with friends. But I also work a 12-step group, it has been incredibly powerful for my journey into understanding my own emotions. And part of that program is just learning how negative emotions come, and then how we can control their leaving. It's just been amazing. And you know, the individual meetings that have come as a result of that are just connecting with people in the program who have been through the shared lived experience that I have gone through. And the beauty of this virus is that it's creating a worldwide shared lived experience that mm-hmm. we can all reflect on simultaneously. So there's tons of literature, tons of resources, and tons of, you know, almost every community around has a 12-step group. So I would highly recommend anyone who has a qualifier just to tap into that program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jilly. And Amy, I suspect you're going to confirm the power of a group.
The power of a group is just amazing. Every time I do a group, I think I've seen it all. And then the healing that I see happen right before my eyes, every time I'm amazed.
Mm. Well, thank you.
And right now there's been the ability with COVID, we've discovered we're doing groups via telehealth. And so that's been a great resource during this time as well. And so if you have the need for a group, to check out our Maine Health website or the MBH website at mh.org or mbh.org for potential support groups.
We'll put that on our Facebook page and our webpage. Thank you both so much. That was Dr. Linda Durst, Chief Medical Officer at Maine Behavioral Healthcare and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. Also with us, Amy Dulac, Bereavement Coordinator for Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling's produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.